some drum percussion stuff. And I just really love to spend all my time like going like obsessively with the recordings and editing and going all the way.
So it's surprising that this album comes so close to your last album. Because if you're a perfectionist, then you must literally work non-stop to get something so much stuff going on in it, and to only be a year after your last effort.
Yeah.
The way that you talk about being very like fastidious and perfect and obsessive, you would kind of maybe assume there'd be a long time between records, but that's not been the case.
Yeah, this record, I don't know how it worked out, but it was finished pretty quickly.
Mm.
And I worked together with a producer for the first time. He did not really like did a lot on the music, but he was the professional ears, and he like said like this is done or this is not done, and that guy really helped me to
kind of step away from stuff
exactly and let the obsessive perfectionism go.
Yeah, a bit like I suppose that you always hear like artists saying like you got to know when to stop painting.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean,
have someone to help you realize exactly. That it's done.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And so, do you find that being a jazz drummer has really helped you in terms of, because a lot of jazz is improvised and, you know, just in the moment?
Mm.
Do you find that having like studied in that style has helped you with this project? Because it's let you go off in all these different directions that maybe if you hadn't have studied jazz, maybe you would be like, right, every song needs to conform to this or these different ramifications.
I think like the thing that I studied jazz means kind of that I just really trying to like follow all the pioneers in all styles actually.
Yeah, right.
And you can say I studied jazz, but I just studied music.
Yeah,
it was on the Jazz Academy. Mm. But I think that is maybe like a thing that's important in my music, that I really love so many different styles. For instance, I was really into DJ Rashad for big time.
Okay.
If you know him.
I don't know, but
he's like this guy from Chicago.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if it's underground. I think so, but. Like he made this this style. He was one of the godfathers of this style, and I just really dig it a lot.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter like if it's jazz or not. And that's kind of the way how I deal with music. I think I was trying to get if something sticks, I try to go to the source, try to find it, and then get really into it for a couple weeks, and then let it go again, and then write music. But I mean, I think my music is very rhythmical based, and that's what's coming from the drumming.
Yeah, right.
And also like the whole improvisation thing, which you just said. I think like how I make my songs is just I'm just improvising in the studio.
Yeah.
And like recording that, and then if there's like a little structure, I just kind of sculpture it.
Nice.
Is that a good
word?
Yeah.
Sculpture. Yeah.
Cool. Sculpture it further, and then there's the song.
Oh, sweet.
Like
and so, what about lyrics and stuff? How do you find that process works for you?
Lyrics often just come automatically, or like a word or something, and then I just stick with that.
Yeah.
That word is connected to that little piece of music or something.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's for some reason. It probably was written in the stars that it had to come together or something like that.
I can't remember who it was, but I was talking to somebody about how our brains are like so clever in ways that we don't know that subconsciously something in your brain went, that goes with that in a way that you can't necessarily put into words, but you just know it's the right thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I believe that. Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
I had often, it's maybe weird to say about your own lyrics, but I mean, I often had like, I wrote a lyric. And then, like, months later, like, one moment I really realized I was in a club and I was pretty pissed, pissed drunk.
Yeah,
and I was in the toilet and I thought about that lyric, and then I actually, for the first time, understood what it was all about.
Yeah, okay.
And, like, these
kind
of things happen often, and then the brain does crazy sort of things.
Yeah, lets you work it out, even though it knew all along, but
probably.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. So, a couple of things I want to talk to you about that aren't quite related to your music.
Okay.
On the show today, we've been talking a lot about, basically, because I went out last night with my friends, had like the best curry
okay.
in the world. Just had a really nice time, put me in such good mood. So I thought it'd be quite interesting to ask all the bands that have been on the show today if they were ordering a curry, like an Indian takeaway, what has to go in your order?
Well, I have like a maybe boring answer.
No, it's all right, yeah.
Because I'm really allergic for nuts and peanuts.
Oh, are you?
So I kind of avoid the Indian takeaway.
Okay, fine.
But I can add to this, like when I'm from the Netherlands, from Rotterdam, and there's a big Surinamese community.
Yeah, right.
And they have their own kitchen.
Okay, like Kadavids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And many others. Many of the football players.
But I'm a Tottenham fan. He used to play for Spurs, and I always just loved him anyway because of his how he would just try and kill people. So
he's the best.
I know a lot about Agadavids more than most people should.
But that they have their own kitchen.
Yeah,
and it's like a mixture of Indian, Indonesian, Creole, like for African.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's I think it's the best thing. And they have the Indian thing is the most famous is the roti.
But yeah.
Do you have that here?
Yeah,
too?
We have rotis. Most English people tend, I feel like here the trend is people have naan breads, but there is roti on the menu. It's just I don't think people order them very often. They normally. Right. But yeah, certainly I've had them in the past.
I think that further developed that in Suriname is like a bit different than the traditional roti. But if you're in Holland and you see a Surinamese restaurant, go either a roti.
As I was saying to you, I'm going to Holland. I'm going to be in Amsterdam at the beginning of December with my wife on just a little city break. And we're going to see a singer called Marika Hackman. She's playing at that. And I won't be able to pronounce this properly, but the Blitzote?
Oh, Bitterzoet.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we're going there.
It means bittersweet.
Oh, does it?
Bitterzoet.
Oh, nice. Oh. Well, and this is what I was going to ask you. So, I know everybody speaks way better English than even English people. could you give me... I was wondering if there's like anything that you think would be super useful for me to be able to say in Dutch.
I think the languages are really similar anyway. So
yeah, right.
If you like guess a bit.
Okay.
Like, I'm drinking a cup of...
Coffee. Just say it a little bit surprised. Coffee. Yeah.
What else? I mean,
because I've always looked at the Dutch language and thought I'd love to learn that, but it looks so terrifying.
Yeah, and it sounds. I think it doesn't sound that great.
Oh, but I love it, and it's I think as well. There's kind of. I was like saying to my wife, maybe we should both learn Dutch because so few people actually speak Dutch in the UK. We could talk about people, and nobody would. Would be able to know what we're talking about. Whereas if you do German or French, everybody has got a little bit of awareness about that.
You don't hear much Dutch in the street here?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't say so. Mm. I don't know. Maybe I'm hanging around the wrong places.
I don't know. But, okay, if you want to say, like, something that's, like, the most famous word in Dutch because it's not really translatable
to
English... It means gezellig.
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 And it means something like cozy.
Cozy.
Or
like
if you're
comforting,
having kind of.
Yeah.
But if you're having a great night with your friends, you can say, and you feel this warm,
like heartwarming,
that heartwarming underbelly feeling. You can say, "Oh man, it's so gezellig."
Gezellig.
With you, like you're so gezellig.
Nice.
That's a positive thing. And if you don't like anybody, you can. I mean, we say a lot.
I'll try and stay out of trouble, but it might come up.
If you want to learn it, I mean, we give names or how you say it. We use body parts a lot.
Okay.
So I mean, you can probably you do it too here and diseases. So maybe I won't go further than this, but
no, go on.
We say like the worst thing to say to somebody used to be what used to be 10 years ago was like. Wow, don't say that. But people say it now all the time.
Yeah.
It's cancer.
You're cancer?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You fucking cancer prick.
Wow.
That's like pretty common these
days. Yeah, okay.
You'd almost say it to your
friends though, right? In some ways.
If somebody's like, oh, you're such
like in this country, you go, oh, you're such a cunt. Like,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You say, you're so kankermogol. They think, oh, you're such a big idiot.
Yeah, it's like all my dad and all his friends are builders.
Okay.
And it'd be like, they'd use the word cunt as like a term of endearment. So it'd be like,
right.
Morning, Terry. How you doing, you cunt? All right. Well, not bad, Mick. You know, that kind of thing.
The guess is not. Will never be on that level.
Right. Okay.
It's still a bit like, okay. He's really pissed.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
Well, hopefully, I won't find myself in that situation.
Don't use it.
No, I won't.
But if you hear it,
gezellig.
Gezellig. Yeah, remember that one.
There. I'm getting there with the pronunciation.
Gezellig.
Gezellig.
That's it.
There we go. Well, thank you for teaching me something. And also, yeah, thank you for your incredible music. I'm a real big fan of your stuff. And obviously, I get a lot of, on this show, it's my job to interview loads of up-and-coming new prospects and new acts and stuff. And so you do find yourselves talking to people and you're like, yeah, it's good stuff, but I can name four or five things it's similar to. Mm. Whereas yours is in a complete category of its own. So, yeah, it's pleasure to listen to.
Thanks,
and,
man.
Yeah, keep up the good work. It's amazing that you could come in and see us today. And we should remind people that you are playing at the Old Blue Last this Friday. And the album, which is Spectacular, is out now. It's called Front Row.
That's it.
And, yeah, also the album before that. What was that called in case people... I mean, they'll just look
the
on
the previous
your,
album is yeah. called Come Future.
Come Future.
Yeah.
Yeah. But check both of those out, especially the new one, Front Row, because it's delightful. Now, we're going to play a brand new track. That it's a...
Yeah.
I mean, told by my producer that it's an exclusive.
It is.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a little... Yeah, it's an exclusive. I'm like Tim Westwood today.
Nice.
So we are going to be playing Until It's Over... Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What can you tell us about that before we play it? Is that hang on. Is that the new one or is it Easy Way to Release?
No, it's
yeah.
Until it's over.
Yeah, cool. I've got both on it. So I was just like,
okay.
Yeah. So what do you want to tell us about Until It's Over?
I mean, it's kind of it's all about that you just have to do the stuff that you want to do in your life before, you know, you're old and you have too much responsibilities and just live your life and go for it.
Till it's over. Till you put your back out like I have today.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
thank you so much for coming in. As I said, this is an exclusive. Jimmy, thank you so much for coming in. This is Joe Goes Hunting and this is Until It's Over, which is an exclusive. And the album is out now. And don't forget, this Friday, Old Blue Last. If you want to go and check him out, I imagine it's going to be incredible live.
It's all fine, it's like a something for me. What can you do? till it's over.
Joe Goes Hunting Until It's Over, and that is an exclusive. Now I've found this button, I'm never going to stop pressing it. Guess what? I get to like play proper radio presenter because Michael Payne is in the studio. His show's next, so we'll do like a good old fashioned handover like people would actually do
proper in, professional
on radio. How you doing?
I'm good, you know. I'm cold. I'm you can see I'm rocking a very fetching fleece. You might not be able to see it actually because it's camouflaged, but yeah, I'm good. I always enjoy your show. Oh. And now I'm enjoying it even more.
You don't have to come in here and say that.
No, it's true. It's so true. I come in here specifically like to catch your show before I do mine.
Well, I listened to yours last week because I was next door doing some work. Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. A little loving that we're having.
Yeah.
So what have you coming up on your show today?
Today we've got four guests, including The Last Skeptic.
Oh, cool.
Kat Burns, a singer-songwriter called Kat Burns, and a rapper called Icy Bergs, and
nice.
another singer called Julian Micah. Look at that. Oh. That's all off the top of the dome as well. That's all
freestyle. No notes.
None of it's true. Those names are all made up.
if Icy Bergs is made up, I'll have that as my rap name. I'm going to ask you this before I'm doing my David Bowie record of the week and get out of here and let you take over. And who have you got co-hosting today?
Today is my regular co-host, actually.
Oh,
yeah, Marcel can make it. So Marcel is going to be joining me.
Sweet. So on the show, I went out for a really good curry last night.
Yeah?
And
whereabouts?
I was so happy. It was in Cannon Street.
Okay.
It was like I met some of my mates who are like city boys.
I was going to say city boys.
Yeah, right. Well, one of them is. And then he was like, yeah, I'm doing well at work. I'm paying for it. So by all means, let him.
Come on.
But when you order a curry, what's your order? Because that's what I've been doing on the show today.
Oh, this is the funniest thing. So there was a big conversation on Twitter the other day. This politician just randomly, someone said to tweet your most controversial opinion on food. And this guy came out of nowhere and said, all Indian food is horrible and we're just pretending we like it. So loads of people just started hitting him with curry puns.
Right,
and obviously the classic, I just slipped into a korma came out from my keyboard. But that is actually my curry of choice.
You're a korma guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's what my wife has. She's like...
Yeah.
It took me ages to like graduate up this. I don't like anything too spicy, but
I do like quite spicy food, but I love a korma just because of the sweet sort of coconut. I don't really like coconut that much, but I do like a korma.
And what are we talking? Chicken, lamb?
Definitely chicken.
Definitely chicken.
100% chicken.
Right, cool. It's good. Now people know about this about you. Do you know?
You know this
before.
Is something
that's why I do it.
But they can apply to me before they kind of my reputation precedes me now.
Yeah, right. Okay, they can have it ready.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, it's nice to see you.
It's very nice.
I'm only
to
doing
see
one
you.
More before Christmas. I'm only doing the 11th. So
I think so am I.
Oh, I'm not in next
week. But I'll see you at the Christmas party.
Maybe the
though.
Station will shut down next week.
What, without us?
Yeah, without us.
Yeah, without us, plus the fact that it's Christmas, I think those two factors.
Oh, no, because I'm not... There's one next week as well.
Oh,
I'm not here.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. I'm really crap at understanding
so
things.
So if you want another 2 hours, just turn up at 2.
Yeah?
Yeah, I reckon.
There's a slot going.
I don't know if that's up to me to say that. But
it's like pirate radio. Just pay your subs and you can go on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Turn up.
I might do it.
Yeah.
I might be Joey Page for 2 hours next week.
Yeah, why not? Just put on a bit of a Cockney accent and not look at any of your notes and you'll be fine.
That's what I'd do anyway. You're literally me on paper.
There we go. Cool. Well, go and get yourself ready. You've got on the biggest Starbucks I've ever seen as
well. I know. Grande.
God, how do you sleep at night? That's too much caffeine.
To be fair, it's only a hot chocolate.
Oh, is it? Okay, that's why.
But my lactose intolerance is going to start playing up.
I've got that, but I'm too... I don't want to know if... I've got something wrong with me, but I don't know what it is.
That's and like me.
If it's bread or if it's cheese, I don't want to know. I'd rather just suffer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Same as me.
There we go. That's good radio, isn't it?
Good chat.
Good chats. This is what... Listeners, right? This is what happens just in the corridor normally, but you're getting... It's like you're spying on...
Yeah, you're a fly on the wall right
conversations.
Now.
Cool. Well, Michael and Marcel are up at 4 o'clock, which is next, unless you're not listening to it live, in which case, if you're not, then when you finish listening to me, why don't you listen to their show, which is also on the FUBAR radio internet system.
It is indeed.
There we go. cool. Have a good show, man.
Thanks, mate.
I'm going to round up the show today, as ever, with my David Bowie record of the week. This week... It Ain't Easy, and it's probably one of the shortest ones, because I picked that because I knew I was going to have a lovely little chat with Michael. So this is your David Bowie record of the week. I'm sure he's eternally grateful that Highly Suspect let him win a Grammy and didn't take it for themselves. I really enjoyed today's show. Don't forget, I'm not here next week, but on the Christmas special, I'll be unveiling my albums of the year. So join me for that. There'll be loads of Christmas-themed stuff, even that's only the 11th of December. But you'd do it if you... If you had a show where you could bring out a Christmas special, you'd do it as early as you could as well. I'll see you next week. This is David Bowie and It Ain't Easy. Michael and Marcel are up next.
You've been listening to Joey Page. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
Disapproval. I don't need it her face I light up and makes me wanna say la da da da. It's not a phase. It's not a phase. Please don't tell me. That's for me to decide for my life. And you can't say what is wrong and what is right, because I've heard that.
Hello and welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I am joined by somebody we have wanted to get on the show for a while, so I'm quite excited to have you here in the studio. I'm joined by Liv Little.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. Now, I think one of the things that I am most passionate about is representation, you know, particularly LGBT plus representation, but representation of everyone. And I think that is something that you and I have in common. We're both incredibly passionate about that. So now, I love Galdem.
Thank you.
But I know, I mean, if they've been living under a rock, some of our listeners may not know about Galdem. So do you want to just tell us a little bit
for sure
about
what
that?
It is, what we do.
What you do.
So Galdem is an award-winning media company that is committed to sharing the perspectives, stories, creative work, talents, and just opinions, thoughts, feelings of women and non-binary people of colour in a media landscape that we know is 94% white and 55% male. And yeah, we're basically shaking things up.
Which is so unbelievably important. And you started this when you were at university as well.
Yeah, I was in my final year at uni. So this was like 4 years ago. And I was sad and I wanted some friends and to connect with a community and people interested, and we had an amazing team get involved, and it kind of grew, and then it became a business. I think the connecting with the community was the first thing, and there were no intentions of like ending up with a creative business, but sure. that's kind of what's happened, which is amazing to be able to go into work every day and look around, and it looks like no other media environment that I've personally ever worked in.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really exciting, and I think there's something really exciting about operating in a small organization where you don't have the levels of bureaucracy and a hierarchy, and you can kind of try things out, and that's what people like about us, I think. Our tone of voice, the fact that we call things out, that we stand for something, and that we're committed, you know.
I love as well that you've seen that there's this massive hole, that there's this massive problem there, and you've gone out of your way and said, you know what, we're not going to wait for other people to give us these opportunities and give us this representation. We're going to, I guess, demand it, and you've done
that. Listen, nothing would happen.
Absolutely.
if that wasn't the way that it worked. And I think even like so many of my peers who are whether it's like creating safe spaces in nightlife or publishing or, you know, whatever it is, it's because there was a massive gap in resources or in space or in language or whatever it was. And I think, you know, it takes one person or a group of people to say, yes, let's try this. And everyone else is kind of like, yes, of course, this needs to exist. It just takes, I think, like that kind of catalyst sometimes. Yeah. It's not that the idea has never been thought of before, but it's how you're able to execute it.
I think it can have a really powerful knock-on effect as well, because once you see one organisation doing this kind of thing, I think other organisations start to pay a little bit more attention and say, well, if they're doing that over here, then maybe we can do that as well. And sometimes it's, I guess, you know, minorities within organisations who are saying, well, I work here and I'm not getting this representation, but they're over there doing that, so maybe we can do a little bit more here. Mm. And I do think people are, and I mean, it is slow, but I do think people are starting to wisen up a little bit, and we are slowly, gradually starting to see a little bit more representation across the board.
I worry about how much the like people who are underrepresented or marginalised within those spaces are then expected to do the work as well, because often it is, you know, another black woman within an organisation who is advocating on behalf of getting other black women there, and because there are so few and the task is so great, you know, it can be an incredibly draining exercise. So, you know, we obviously need to have more people in positions of decision making to be able to really shake things up in media and commissioning and television and journalism. It's like all of it, music, whatever it is. Still a bit stale, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit stale. Do you think we need a bit more like allyship of more people stepping up and, you know, recognizing the issues there and actually saying, I'm gonna, you know, help this community of people. I know I think you're friends with Jamie Windust as well. They were talking about allyship very very recently. I think it was today or yesterday. And they were talking about how they spoke at an event about being an ally, and so many of the people there were shaken up and almost like offended by them saying that, you know, you need to do better and you need to support us. And I think a lot of people out there are a little bit uncomfortable.
But people have to be okay with being uncomfortable.
They have to be okay with being uncomfortable.
Because we are uncomfortable so much of the time, you know. Step into the world, step into that feeling of uncomfortability and really challenge yourself. And I think the biggest thing is just recognizing when there aren't people in a room that look like you, but also when you're not the best person for the job. And I think, you know, within journalism and in media, so many, I don't know, so much misrepresentation could be avoided if people who actually represented those demographics and experiences that the media is trying to capture were actually involved in the decision-making process, or in writing the stories, or in filming the content, or shooting the content, or, you know, whatever it is. I feel like I'm asked this so often, and there are just so many solutions which people know about because it's been written about, it's been researched, the stuff exists on the internet, you can figure out what you need to do.
But so it's very doing it.
It's simple, but people don't want to let go of their privilege, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it when I'm made to feel a little uncomfortable. You know, it's not always a pleasant experience to say,
but that's how you grow.
That
I think.
Is how
and
you
I
grow.
Think, you know, all of us have learning and journeys and stuff to go on. No one's perfect or has all of the answers, but I think we have to be willing to do the work. Yeah, like you say, no matter how uncomfortable that makes us feel.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, speaking about being uncomfortable, I want to move into, because I feel like it's very relevant right now, into a little discussion around politics, because I've seen a few posts on the Galdem Instagram page, which really I found quite affecting, because, and this isn't something I've spoken about publicly yet, but I'm still a little bit undecided about where I'm going to place my vote in a couple of weeks. And I'm torn
What's
between...
What's tearing you?
I'm torn between Labour and Lib Dem, because right. I want to get the Tories out. I feel like this is a very, you know, popular opinion.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure where to place that vote. I feel personally like Lib Dems most accurately reflect my beliefs, but I feel like
I think
it's
you just
not...
have to think about how effective your vote is going to be.
Yes.
And I always go with kind of the tactical vote, and I know that in my area, in my borough, if I was to vote for the Liberal Democrats, that would be a waste.
A wasted
and
vote.
And that would be like giving a vote over to the Tories. So I think you have to do your research and figure out whether you're in a place where you're able to swing something, or whether actually, bigger picture here, regardless of whether, you know, the political system is very flawed. It's completely imperfect. But I'm thinking about who has the policies and who wants to affect change in a way that's going to benefit the communities that I'm a part of, and also that like I serve. And I think, as we know, women of colour are a group that is consistently hit incredibly hard by all of these kind of Tory measures of austerity. And there's so much that has to happen now to go the other way. So that's why I'm voting Labour. And that's why that's kind of the stance that we have taken. And I don't think it's a... There's no time for like uncertainty.
Yes.
You have to really stand for something, and you have to go for it, you know, because the current political climate is so dire, it's so scary. And oftentimes in the current climate, it's the difference between life and death. We're feeling the kind of effects of living under this Tory government that's led by absolute nonsense, racism, bigotry.
Absolutely.
So I think it's important that we use our platforms, and also we don't have to be impartial.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you may have very well just convinced me which way to vote. So well done on that. Would you think it's fair to say that we're almost like we're not privileged enough as it stands to like really vote for the party that we fully believe in? I mean, a few years back I voted Green because I felt like...
I voted Green in Bristol because there was actually a chance of that happening. And that was the same election that I remember watching all night in the SU whilst seeing with all my kind of enthusiasm that actually this was going to be a Conservative government. I remember going home and crying and being with my friends and us not knowing how to respond or to react. But I think you have to be strategic in what it is. And I think we don't live in a political system that is perfect or that like accurately represents people, but we have to kind of try to work with what we've got, and we're doing an event actually, which I don't think has been announced yet, over the election evening. So more info to come, but we're thinking about the ways in which we can continue to organize and keep the momentum going after the election. You know, we're hoping for the outcome that we want, and in a case in which we don't get that, what is the kind of what does the kind of community organizing and activism and response to that look like? So I think we just have to constantly be coming together and strategizing and trying to dismantle these oppressive systems that we live in.
I love that. That's so cool. Are you able to tell us anything more about this event, or is it still planning stages?
It's confirmed, but I don't think we've published about it.
Right, okay.
But I would just say, like, keep an eye out on our social media channels, and it should be revealed very soon. I should have actually checked if I was allowed to, I'm allowed to say it.
And presumably this is going to be a very an event aimed at women and non-binary people of colour, or is it going to be for kind of everybody, or
that's a good question.
Like, I'm basically saying, can I come?
Can you come?
Yeah.
I think you can come. I mean, you know, in terms of the community that we serve, we're looking at ways that we can empower, protect, ensure that services and things which are impacting our specific communities are kind of protected, or that we can think about ways to organize around that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's open.
Well, it sounds very exciting. Mm. I know you have another event coming up as well that I thought.
Oh God,
I
would, what's that?
It's happening on Saturday, the 7th of December.
Oh, in Newcastle.
Yes, in Gateshead.
Yeah. And I'm doing that event as well. You're testing me. Yeah, so we are doing...
it's about like old diary entries.
Yeah, it is. So we've got, I don't know why, I'm just, listen, first day of my period, I'm like, my brain is all over the place. I'm really tired.
It's
taking me a minute to to just like get with it. The cramps. So we're doing a really lovely event. So earlier this year, we published our first book, which was called Galdem Growing Up. And it was basically about us as writers, editors, as the Galdem kind of team. An extended body responding to our old diary entries, so directly responding to like either the cringe, the stressful, the sad, the depressing, like moments that we had growing up. So mine, I didn't actually keep a diary because I wasn't that organized. Charlie kept a diary, and that's kind of where the idea emerged from. But mine was a bunch of like Facebook messages,
yeah,
and it was about the first girl that I ever loved, and I was obsessed with her. I thought that this was like it. This was like the love of my life. I'm like very dramatic, and I was very dramatic then. But we basically are using that format, and we're hosting an event with Rennie and Miriam and Anita, and we're basically going to be asking them to look back and ask questions and offer up some like lessons to their younger selves. So you can expect laughs, you can expect a bit of cringy conversation and everything that's in between. To be honest, we can't predict what's
sure,
going to happen.
Yeah, it's gonna be,
but it's always a really interesting conversation to have. And then on the 8th, I'm going to be at the same festival in conversation with Candice Carty-Williams. It's probably the fourth time that I've interviewed her, but she's phenomenal author of Queenie, which is an incredible book. And so, yeah, it's going to be a really full weekend. And it's really important, I think, that we are not just programming in London.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, absolutely.
It's good to go out and to connect with people all over the UK.
Well, it's incredible to hear how many things you're doing. I don't really understand where you've got the time to be doing all these things.
We have a very, we have a really sick team. So yeah.
Absolutely, it shows. And I mean, you are obviously the driving force as well. Give yourself a little credit.
Well, don't do it alone.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. We're going to be playing a game very shortly. But before we do that, let's have a little bit more music. So this is Side Effects, Carly Hansen.
Was the one who wanted no strings. Now I'm tying us together. Told myself I wouldn't feel things if I labeled us whatever. But the way you put your clothes on while you're dancing in the mirror got me thinking it's been so long since I felt so fucking unwell. I've been losing sleep. I can't eat. I'm so weak. Medication like it's taken off the shelf, giving me these complications. You turn me into someone else. Now I'm losing sleep. I can't eat. I'm so weak. I wasn't looking for this. Now I don't want this to end. Lying on the kitchen floor, feeling all the side effects. I had it all together. Such a wreck.
to quit. Now I'm losing sleep. I can't eat. I'm so weak.
We're going to play a little game now, and now I did just tell you the name of the game while we were listening to the music there, and I think you hated
it. It's fantastic. It's amazing.
This
it's very
game,
original as well. No one has ever said that to me before.
Has no one ever said this before?
No, joking. Oh, babes, it's all right.
Breaking my heart. So this game is the Live a Little game, and in this game I have a load of different things in front of me, whether they're scenarios, items, or people, and I'm going to read them out to you, and you're just going to tell me whether you like them a little or like them a lot, or not at all, which is also a very acceptable answer.
Okay. I don't know what, I'm panicking, my heart is racing. I just feel like, am I going to get it right?
There's no right or wrong answers, I promise. So the first one is Drag Race UK.
I'm probably quite in the middle. I watched a few episodes. You didn't ask for me to go into a thing like
no,
this.
No, please
it's
do.
A game.
Please do.
I watched the first two and I was like unsure, but I think it's because I'd slightly fallen out of love with the US show. And then actually I thought, yeah, do you know what? It's good to hear a bit of British humour in there. So I did quite enjoy the last few. You know, Bag of Chips has said some really racist things.
Oh, wow,
previously.
Really?
Previously. So, you know, I wasn't best pleased that they were there. So let me say, and also would have liked to have seen more Queens of Colour. But yes. So I'll say like them a little.
Okay, I like that answer. And I kind of feel like we may be in like a bit of agreement with this, because I've also kind of in recent years fallen out of love with the US show. I mean, I think it's still amazing that we're getting such, you know, it's become a mainstream show now. So having that LGBT plus representation is incredible. But at the same time, I'm like, it could be doing a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I feel RuPaul even has said some slightly problematic things around trans people of color, etc. So, yeah, I have that frustration too. What I do think is good about the show is I really didn't think they were going to like celebrate UK queens for their UK talent, because the drag scene over here is very different. And I feel like they actually have done that.
I'm excited
quite well.
To see what the next series is like.
And a little bit more representation.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay, our next one, Pride Marches.
Like the mainstream Pride Marches. I mean, I love UK Black Pride.
Yeah.
I love that as a space. I love Lady Phil and Chloe and all of the team.
We all love Lady Phil, yeah.
Literally, just the best, the greatest, support, wonderful human woman. I don't really engage in like the main Pride March.
Yeah.
It's very commercial, and yeah, I feel safer in a space like UK Black Pride, to
Absolutely.
Be honest. So I would say a little, but UK Black Pride a lot.
A lot. I like that answer. I know there are a lot of places around the world now where they're kind of separating their Pride marches into two. Mm-mm. So they have their big kind of corporate Pride, which is still a party. It's very, you know, flashy. Mm-mm. And then they have their more political Pride marches. I went to World Pride in New York. I don't know if you happened to be there.
No, I wasn't. And
they had this here, and it was amazing to see. And like, yes, it was nice to see the big glamorous Pride parade over here, but it was also lovely to go over to the other end of the city and see, and it was still, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, you know, talking about the things that really affect our community and making it more political.
Exactly. And it is supposed to be inherently political, and I think, you know, there are a lot of brands that are only kind of interested. I think it's such an important that we have these spaces to be celebrated as queer people. But I think, yeah, there's a danger, or not a danger, but yeah, kind of a danger,
danger
actually,
yeah,
when
right.
when brands try and get in on the action and capitalize off of it, and actually are only interested in spotlighting our community when it is the month of June, rather than
when
like understanding
them, yeah.
that, you know, these are people, campaigns, issues, projects that you should be spotlighting and supporting all year round.
Yeah. There are some amazing brands, I think, though, that do it all year
No,
round.
Some of them have like a legacy of it, but not all of them do.
I think we both have worked with Absolute Vodka, and
they do
stuff all year round, and I absolutely adore them for that.
A Drop of Love.
Yeah, those campaigns, it's lovely. Which I like, so not everyone's
We're just like doing
wrong.
Some free advertising right now, so.
Yeah, I'll be sending a check. An invoice. I'm not sending you a check. Okay, our next one. Instagram removing the likes.
I don't really mind.
You don't have an opinion.
No, I genuinely. I mean, that it's apparently to do with
mental
preserving
health.
People's mental health, whether that's true or not, we don't know. But in terms of me personally,
we're having a lot of agreement here. I kind of feel the same. I'm like, I don't really mind either way. There's a lot of people really upset, a lot of people really,
really?
Passionate about this.
Okay.
I don't know
any of them.
It's like, it's Instagram likes, everyone. Like, calm
down.
Yeah, I
think, like, life will go on. Like,
life will
okay.
go on. Sex toys.
Yes.
Yes. Like a lot.
I didn't, yeah, like them a lot. Yeah,
me too.
No more needs to be said on that one.
This one might be a little bit more divisive. Mm. Jamila Jamil.
A little. There's space there, potential there. Things have been said that I don't necessarily agree with or too quickly. Sometimes it can feel like feminism light, maybe.
Right, yeah, like diet feminism. Feminism zero,
yes.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there is scope and space there. And I think it was good to see a platform being lent recently to voices and causes and things that should be heard. And I think it's important that, you know, those of us that have platforms use them effectively and responsibly. So I guess a little.
I've butted heads with her a couple of times over things. Like, I actually do, you know, again, I like what she stands for, and I think she's doing good work. Mm. I just think it doesn't always land quite correctly. But I do like that she's now, you know, trying to raise up other voices a little bit more and stepping back and giving her platform to other people. So I think she's improving, and I think her intentions are good.
And I know that a lot of young people really do resonate with her.
Yeah, I mean, I love The Good Place. It's a good show. So. like for that reason. London LGBT plus nightlife.
Yeah, love. Pussy Palace, babes.
Yes.
Hello, amazing.
They were
love
on the show
all.
Recently. We
Completely
love them.
Changed my life. I remember going to the first Babes 4 years ago, which is around the time that Gangnam launched, and just I'd never been in a space like that before, really.
Yeah.
And I was kind of really just coming into myself and understanding. Not even... Yeah, understanding who I was a bit more, or feeling confidence in the fact that who I am is okay. And I think, like, having spaces like this are really a testament to it. And there's also Misery Party, which is a sober space which celebrates queer people of colour.
I didn't know
that.
That
Aisha Mirza runs. They're amazing. Harpies. There are lots of things that exist that, you know, we as a community can now feel safe in. And I think that's so important. So yes, love all of them. And I think that they're all doing an incredible job of kind of shaking up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Space.
Completely agree, 100%. The next one, it says bondage, but I'm actually going to change this to like sex positive communities.
Amazing all the way.
Why you
weren't
going to say no?
Yeah, of course. Love them, yeah. There's actually a festival that's coming up called Sex and Rage. That I don't actually know loads about, but one of my good friends is running an event of like erotic readings. I'm really excited to see what that looks like. And that is obviously a celebration of kind of, you know, sex positivity. So
what's an erotic reading? Like a tarot like, reading, but
no,
erotic.
No. Oh, interesting.
Like, yeah, I was like, I don't think,
yeah, I mean, I want one of those. My girlfriend reads tarot actually, so I need to
put a twist on it.
Book her in for one of those erotic tarot sessions, which I think she might have done some erotic tarot sessions at an event before. But they're reading like erotic like literature, I guess.
Obviously.
Yeah, exactly. So poems, short stories, etc., etc., which is really interesting.
Amazing. Yeah. And I'm being told, I've got it in front of me, that the next one is Tuesday, December 3rd. So
okay, yes.
Yeah, I feel like people should get right to that. A little bit of promo there, which is nice.
Yeah, why not?
I've got one last thing on my list. Mm. And I know your answer already. Well, at least I think I do. Piers Morgan.
Fuck, like, no. that wasn't good an option. Answer. Was that an option? Like them a lot. No. I don't know. Yeah, does that...
Yeah, the thing that upsets me with Piers, though, is occasionally he says something sensible and then everyone shares it and it goes viral and I'm like, you're sharing it, and it makes him look like a sensible human being.
No one that I know is sharing those moments. And I'm not really that big on Twitter, so I missed that. But no, everything that I see is vile, so... You know, not involved.
There was a couple of days ago. He was like, he said something like against a Tory MP, I think, and this went viral. And I was like, I mean, I agree with what he's saying, but I don't agree with him as a person.
Yeah, why are we celebrating that?
So like, let's not.
Or you said something really obvious that like everyone knows is wrong, and like for some reason because you're Piers Morgan, people are celebrating that.
Yes,
but like not calling you out for all of the other homophobic. Racist,
awful, transphobic, or all of the above.
Exactly. That you. So no, I don't engage.
Good. That's a good answer. I like that. There's a round two. Are you ready for round two? Are you exhausted? So did you ever watch Play Your Cards Right? Is that what that game's called?
No.
With the up and down. With the up, you're looking at me blankly. Okay, let me try and explain this. So I've got some facts which are all related to sex in front of me. Mm. And so the first fact
is this a test?
More than 1 million STIs are acquired every day worldwide. Mm. So that's our first fact.
Okay.
I've now got a second fact, and we have to guess whether the number is larger or littler.
Okay,
Am I making any
sense? Yeah, let's try. Let's give it a go.
Okay, so... Are there a little or larger number of people who think about celebs when they're masturbating than 1 million?
A day?
Yeah, I guess it must be a day. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, what do I do? Do I think about celebrities when I'm masturbating?
I have, but I wouldn't say it's like my regular go-to.
Yeah, neither.
Yeah.
Just think about my girlfriend.
But how many people? There's a lot of people in the world.
Yeah.
Like, and a million isn't that many.
Oh, I don't know. I just don't know. Or how many people are diagnosed with?
So there's a million people. A million STIs are acquired every day worldwide. So do we think more than a million people masturbate over celebrities every day or less? I think more, probably. I don't know who's doing the polls on these numbers.
How do you know?
I don't know where we're getting this information from.
To be honest, there are like a lot of super fans out there who make like a lot of erotic fiction. So maybe we'll go for more.
Yeah, I think more too. Yeah. Okay, so I don't know the answer, by the way. We're a team in this.
When do we know?
I'm going to be told. So I think we both think that higher. We think more people. Apparently it's less. It's only 30,000.
Beyonce
topped the list as the most thought about woman. And Brad Pitt topped the male list. I don't know. Brad Pitt.
I'm not on it.
I don't understand that. I'm never on board with that. But good for you, Brad, I guess. Beyonce makes sense to me.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that.
Okay. I thought it'd be like, you know, Rihanna or something.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So our next one is at the 2012 London Olympics, which lasted 17 days. Was the number of condoms the athletes were provided with little or larger than the number of people who fantasize about celebs?
Sorry, can you say that again?
I know, it's really complicated, isn't it?
So, I'm just tired.
So at the 2012 London Olympics, how many condoms do we think were given out to the athletes?
Right.
Do we think it's more than 30,000 or less than 30,000?
Oh, less.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I think it might be more.
Really?
I think
I'm bad at this game.
I feel like athletes are like, because they're not allowed to have sex before they like perform and stuff, I think.
Mm-mm-mm.
Perform? Is that what athletes do?